Welcome to Dig Deep, a podcast that explores the world of drilling and environmental remediation. Join us as our hosts and technical experts dig into industry news, technologies, safety, and sustainability. This show is brought to you by Cascade Environmental, a company that offers a full range of geotechnical and environmental drilling, advanced site investigation, and highly innovative remediation services and technologies. Have feedback or something specific you want to hear? Email communications@cascade-env.com or click the link in the episode notes. We greatly appreciate feedback to help make this podcast a valuable resource for you.
Hey, this is Sue Bruning.
And I'm Rob Dankert.
And we're thrilled you're joining us for our second episode of Cascade's Dig Deep podcast. Today, we're discussing safety in the drilling industry. We brought the topic of safety in early to our podcast series because it's such an important issue in the drilling and remediation industry.
We'll be speaking with Michael Gentry, Senior Safety Director for Cascade. Michael is a longtime safety professional and veteran of the U.S. Air Force. He holds copyrights on two hazard recognition and safety behavior processes titled Intentional Safety Process and Safety Performance Management, or SPM for short. SPM is effectively utilized by one of the world's largest construction companies and a highly regarded oil field service company.
Also in this episode, we'll be taking a peek at the Northeast Regional Safety Meeting. The team there will be focusing discussion on the use of Cascade cards. The Cascade card program is a great tool because it encourages participation by employees at every level and even clients. It really enforces that culture of safety. Here at Cascade, we start every meeting with a safety tip, whether it's out in the field or in the office. And our podcast is no different. I'm going to turn it over to Rob to present our safety tip for today's podcast.
Our tip of the day focuses on the particular season we're in right now. Spring is in the air and yard and gardening work may be on our minds. Take 15 minutes to stretch before you start to avoid soft tissue injuries. Focus on your arms, legs, and back. And don't forget to bend at the knees when picking up those large bags of soil.
So, Rob, you've been in the drilling industry for about 20 years. It seems like every drilling contractor touts their safety program. Why is the topic so prominent in the drilling industry?
Yeah, the topic, I think, is so popular because everybody enjoys a health and safe workplace. And most folks believe it's essential for all industry in order to promote the well-being of both employers and employees. I think that the drilling industry in particular has a higher risk of incidents versus more office-based occupations. So you think of the folks in the field that are moving around drill steel versus people like us that type away on keyboards and get in the car and drive around all day. Equipment around a drill site can pose even higher risks if they're not properly managed. The hoses, compressors, and bags of material, the more common injuries can be the slips, trips, and falls. The drilling industry is also a more manually intensive job. So in addition to stationary or moving equipment, there's the risk of personal injury from physically moving that equipment. Strained backs and hamstrings, they're also a common source of incidents on the job site.
How often does the topic of safety come up when you're talking with clients or bidding on projects?
Yeah, I'd say safety comes up about 30% of the time when I'm speaking or meeting with clients. They're typically the ones that have a real program in place with dedicated personnel instead of just using a safety term as a slogan on company collateral or their webpage.
Have safety issues ever prevented you from winning a job or stopped work in the midst of a project?
We've never lost a job because of our safety ratings, but we've certainly had situations where the project has stopped in mid-project. It happens all the time. Hazard recognition prior to action is really crucial for preventing reportable incidents. Some clients will sometimes use third-party audit companies like Browse, Aveda, and ISNet World to vet contractors on their safety records. I think it's obvious that those of our clients who are willing to pay a significant amount to subscribe to those services are really the ones that value safety and rely upon the contractor's safety records. Sue, as chair of Cascade Sustainability Council, you've worked on many health and safety issues. How does safety fit into the sustainability picture?
So I think safety, health and safety is really one of those issues that hits the sweet spot for sustainability. And by that, I mean it really ties all three pillars of sustainability together. So we're talking about environmental stewardship and social responsibility, environmental impact. Just to dig in a little bit deeper on that. So when you think about environmental stewardship, you know, out on site, accidents can lead to spills or unintended releases of things like hazardous materials. And another big issue for environmental protection is dust control out at the sites when we're drilling and moving dirt around. With respect to social responsibility, so we want to provide an environment where employees can flourish and send them home every day free of injury. That includes accident prevention, training, responding, and reporting. And another piece of the social responsibility is just being a good neighbor, everything from traffic control to noise abatement. And then the last piece is that financial piece. Safety practices have a direct economic impact from the local level all the way up to the corporate level. Workers' comp claims, insurance, risk to future business, like we talked about a little bit earlier, regulatory fines and sanctions, all of that has a monetary effect. So accident and risk prevention really saves a significant amount of money.
You know, Sue, I would advocate that safety really plays a role in every aspect across an organization.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think it really comes down to communication. You can have the best, most comprehensive health and safety program, but if you're not continuously communicating it throughout the organization and to all of your other stakeholders, it's really, you can't benefit from it. So I hope with today's conversation on our podcast, we can really provide our audience with some valuable information to consider, whether they're just starting up a safety program or looking to improve their own program or evaluating that of a potential partner or vendor. All right, and now we're moving on to my favorite part of the podcast, and that's our interview portion. Today we have joining us Michael Gentry, Senior Safety Director at Cascade. Welcome, Michael. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sue.
Oh, Michael, tell us a little bit about your background and your role here at Cascade.
Formal safety education at two universities, UCD and Texas A&M. I've worked multiple industries in which I've held roles from regional safety manager to national director of VHS. I've been fortunate enough to work for one of the world's largest risk control Fortune 500 companies as a VP of loss control, which I was able to consult for numerous industries and able to apply my personal safety methodologies specific to behavior conditioning and employee safety performance improvement. I currently serve as the Senior Safety Director of Cascade.
I understand you've done a lot of work in the field of hazard recognition and behavior conditioning safety. You mentioned your personal safety methodologies. Can you explain for us a little bit about the practice of behavior conditioning or behavior-based safety programs?
Sure. So actually, my efforts are specific to combining workplace antecedents, compensation, promotion, retention, and individual job performance, which results in a desired behavior. So it's really finding what triggers that individual's behavior toward not taking risk on our job sites. And in the workplace, you know, you have to find out what's important to them. And I think the majority of people, what's important to them is, you know, compensation, opportunities for promotion or advancement, and retention, keeping a job. So we use that. We focus on that as the antecedent. In our case here at Cascade, employees connecting hazard recognition as a major performance skill results in the employee utilizing a more consistent and effective hazard risk sonar, if you will. An abbreviated description would be communicate to our employees that safety is an aptitude or a skill. And we'll first define what that skill is, how we're going to measure it, how they can achieve proficiency in it, and how it positively affects your career here at Cascade. So it's a combination of behavior and performance.
And it really comes down to enforcing a culture of safety throughout the workplace.
It's how you work. It's how you apply that safety methodology and what's important. And when everybody is doing the same thing with one common goal, that's how you establish a culture.
Given the wide variety of potential hazards encountered in the field and the fact that conditions on site can change day to day and even hour by hour, what have you found to be the most effective tools for communicating safe practices, injury prevention, and just general awareness given those dynamic situations?
Great point. Because there are so many different dynamic situations, Cascade utilizes numerous vehicles for communication. Initially, field level personnel are safety sensitive positions, complete up to 80 hours of safety policy, procedure, and program training. Then yearly, we have a refresher training that is attended annually by all of our hands in yearly safety training sessions. And for those occasions when we want to share investigation findings as a learning mechanism, where we look at trends, we evaluate our data, our observation data, our reevaluating our JSAs. We utilize an RCT process, which is required Cascade training. And what that is an email generated communication that speaks specifically to whatever we've identified during that trend analysis. You know, we have monthly safety meetings where we communicate best practices, policy reminders throughout the year. So we're not waiting for that once a year solely training session. We have a Cascade website where we post Cascade card data, and we use that as both a recognition portal and a learning mechanism. Additionally, on a monthly basis, we construct our Cascade card bulletin that is used as both an exercise in employee recognition and also a training mechanism specific to hazard recognition and what an effective hazard observation looks like for those who need to improve their risk recognition skill set.
Let's talk a little bit about statistics. How important a role do safety statistics play in any safety program?
Well, you know, it's key, actually. Safety stats play active roles in different arenas. Our clients utilize our safety performance stats as qualifying factors during the bidding process. Internally, we put the majority of our focus on pre-loss data or pre-loss stats. Progressive companies no longer just rely on lagging indicators solely as a means of continuous improvement. So although the tracking of incidents plays an active role in the overall evaluation of a safety plan's effectiveness, more importantly, the tracking of daily performance metrics, again, from a pre-loss position, will allow you to closely monitor our company's incident avoidance activity.
So you're talking about pre-loss data. What specifically is that?
Okay, it's data that pre-loss data is data that we collect before an incident occurs. So you can use post-loss and or lagging indicators, like a lot of companies do or used to do, solely as a means to evaluate.
And that would be like a TRIR, like a OSHA, what we're familiar with, lost time, incident rate.
Right, lost time, sure, TRIR. Okay. We use pre-loss data. So we collect that data, going back to the Cascade cards. Again, such an effective tool. We also use our JSIs, which is our job site inspections, our C3PO, which is our behavior observation that occurs in the field. We collect all of that data, and that data tells us a story. That data tells us what are the hazards are that we're coming across that are frequent in nature. It allows us to establish trends and then identify control measures for those trends. So we rely heavily on all that activity before an incident occurs, which is obviously the most successful means to prevent injuries. And you referenced TRIR. The universal tracking rate is called a TRIR, total recordable incident rate. It's a calculation of the number of incidents that meet OSHA's definition of a serious injury, times 200,000 work hours divided by your company's total work hours for the year, and you come up with this rate. Again, at that point, you've already experienced some injuries or illnesses. So your response, truthfully, is too late. You're going to use that data to help you improve going forward, but you've had to experience incidents to formulate a plan. The data that we collect before an incident occurs allows us to prevent that incident.
Michael, we talked in the a beginning of our podcast about how safety falls into the real sweet spot of sustainability. And by that, I mean it really touches on all three pillars of sustainability: environmental stewardship, social responsibility, and economic performance. Can you tell us a little bit of your experience, how safety performance ties to the financial performance of a company?
Sure. So safety performance can either have a positive or negative impact on a company's financial performance. Incident performance directly impacts a company's finances by leveraging low loss cost performance during our insurance negotiations. Much like your personal car insurance, you have multiple incidents, your rates go up, and your choice of carriers are limited. A low incident loss cost rate allows us to leverage that rate for lower premium cost. Another example of having a good safety program or performance record can benefit a company is when you operate in the space that Cascade does, whereas our clients utilize a rather sophisticated evaluation and or qualification process where selection is often based on your safety performance and or record. Conversely, having a high incident rate can often disqualify you from even entering into the bidding process. Other outcomes can be what we call reputational risk. You know, having a reputation, either good or poor or bad, can affect everything from project selection to recruiting enough candidates to fill project rosters. So you can see safety performance can have a direct impact on a number of financial performance indicators.
For smaller companies or ones that haven't really invested significantly in a health and safety program yet, they're just getting off the ground, what are some basic steps they can take to implement a health and safety program, and what resources are available?
Obviously, establishing a top-down commitment is the first thing. And I'm not speaking specifically about a vision statement, but true commitment through funding, staffing, and defined responsibilities. After that, a complete evaluation of the work operation. So, as I mentioned earlier, you should not buy a canned program and try to fit your company and the task involved in your company's efforts into a canned program. You build your program as a reflection of what you do and how you do it. The best starting point, as far as resources, the best starting point should always be OSHA, because not only are they the governing body, they offer incredible resources to start, maintain, and improve your safety program. Another resource is your insurance industry. If you can go to your carrier or insurance broker who retains some of the most impressive minds in the safety profession, and they're staffed for the very purpose of assisting their clients in developing effective safety programs.
That's great. I think that the message I'm getting from our conversation today is that an effective safety program isn't really a check the box kind of exercise. It really needs extensive level of employee engagement at all levels throughout the organization. You need to have a strong component of employee recognition. And then, of course, you've got that quantifiable, that metrics piece to really be able to demonstrate effectiveness of the program.
Back in the day, it used to be just that safety manual, and the only role of a safety individual was to go out and perform incident investigations. Well, they were busy. they were busy because all they utilized was that manual and that policy and procedure. And we recognized that wasn't the most effective way. So we started building, the safety profession started building different processes, behavior-based processes and employee measurement processes and employee improvement processes. And we've reached a point where we're happy with our progress, but realize that it's a never-ending journey, and continuous improvement will always be part of any safety program. Of course, zero is always the goal. So applying different methodologies and philosophies to get to that goal will always be part of the safety profession, definitely part of what we do here at Cascade.
Well, Michael Gentry, thank you for joining us on our podcast today. I think we've had some great conversation here about safety that applies not only to the field of environmental services, but I think there's a lot of good points here that someone can take away that's active in any type of industry.
Thank you.
Today we are sitting in on a safety meeting led by Brian Duffy, Regional Environmental Health and Safety Director at Cascade.
All right.
Attendees include the field personnel like drillers and technicians, project managers, and senior leaders like Ron Thalacker, Senior Vice President of Drilling Operations.
I appreciate it, and we'll get started. So first off, thanks everybody for taking the time to join the call. I want to start off by thanking all the nominees for the Q1 Employee of the Quarter.
Brian goes over common hazards the crews will be facing in the coming weeks and provides guidance on how to manage the hazards.
So whenever we're doing that kind of work, or even in level C, if we have suits on, we need to make sure that we have a good conservative work rest schedule, and we need to pay attention to the heat index. All right. So, I mean, if you have any weather apps on your phone or the OSHA's got what they call the OSHA heat app, those apps will tell you what the heat index is. If that gets over like 85 degrees, we need to start implementing physiological monitoring for our crews. All right. And all that means is we should be checking body temperature and heart rate at the beginning of each rest period. All right. And then we adjust the work and rest schedule as needed. If you have anything in your pipeline coming up that might be a level B or even like modified level C with suits like that, let me know. We want to make sure that that's addressed either in the client's health and safety plan or definitely in our own health and safety plan there.
In each regional safety meeting, the attendees have the opportunity to share their Cascade cards with their peers. The Cascade card is a hazard recognition tool that allows any employee or client to immediately mitigate the risk of an actual or potential hazard. They spot the hazard, correct it, then document it on a Cascade card. People can submit a card on a mobile device, desktop computer, or by hand. Trends in the frequency and types of occurrences are shared in company-wide communications. Cascade estimates an annual savings of nearly $500,000 from these immediate corrective actions.
And actually, speaking of Cascade cards, so we had over 4,000 submissions again in April, which I think means we've hit that mark every month this year, definitely since February. I got to check January too, but I think we've hit 4,000 cards per month per month all year. So that's the new benchmark, I think. You know, we're consistently hitting that level. There's no going back. The participation's been great. I sent out a summary of each business unit's, each BU in the Northeast participation over the last year. So if you could just take a look at that and keep identifying and helping people who need to work on their participation. The program makes a difference. You know, we're still off to a great start this year with injuries, and the Cascade cards have been through the roof as a company. So again, you know, I talk about that correlation all the time. It really matters. It helps guys in the field, with identification of hazards and with correction of them. And
hazards come in all shapes and sizes. There's more to watch out for than moving equipment. Springtime brings.
Phil Popus, I'm out on the sidewalk, so I have to get back. But I don't have a Cascade card listed in front of me, but I do want to share something today.
Sure.
So yesterday, I was in the office, Dennis Sean. I'm going on the sidewalk out east in Montauk. It's Camp Hero. Sean says, you better bring some bug spray. And I kind of chuckled and I said, Jesus, Sean, it's low 40s at night. It's going to be 52 for a high today. I think I'll be fine. I think we're okay. Long story short, after walking the site in the woods, nothing too crazy, I'm taking the client to Montauk Downs where he's meeting with Army Corps. Gets out of the car, I drive off to make some phone calls, and I look at my dashboard, and there's a tick crawling up the dashboard. I can't tell you how fast I semi-stripped down in the car to make sure I didn't have any ticks on me. But what I'm saying is, it's already been announced that this season is going to be a horrific tick season. Take every precaution. Wear Tyvek. if you're in a wooded area, take off your ankles and your wrists, bug spray, whatever precautionary measures you can take. Please do, because here we are at the beginning of May. It's still cold, and they're out there.
We're reminded that personal protective equipment, or PPE, is just as important in the shop as it is in the field.
A quick one to share. I'm not sure if we got entered into a card or not yet, but we had a good observation here at the shop in Montpelier last week. We've got a lot of good folks in from the field right now, sort of refitting out all the trucks, and noticed that, you know, there's some sort of just a mental disconnect between use of PPE in the field versus here in the shop, where obviously the safety issues are just as real as they are out in the field. And so we just had a chance to remind everyone about that and to make sure that everyone was using the proper PPE when they're here at home as well.
Yep, good point. I mean, we run into a lot of the same hazards, you know, especially like mechanics and stuff like that working in the shop. We definitely have similar hazards in the shop as we do in the field. So,
one of the most important policies is the ability for any employee to halt operations if they believe a significant risk to health and safety is present. It's called stop work authority. Melissa Purdy explains how it was used recently.
I'm going to run through one of the Cascade cards that we'd like to highlight that came in this month, and that would be from Tim Van Ness. And he states that there were unauthorized workers who were on site employed by our clients. They were in our work zone, and they did not have proper PPE on, and they were working very close to our drilling operations. Tim thought that it was a hazard to everyone involved. He stopped drilling, spoke to them, asked what it was they were doing, how long would it take them to finish. He also spoke to them about wearing PPE for their own personal safety, and they determined that they'd be about an hour, so we suspended our work until they were finished. They could get out of our way, and then we continued. Everyone was safe and happy. I think it kind of, not just PPE, I think it goes to say something about communication and how important it is, and we appreciate it. Thanks.
As this warm season comes along in our busy time of year, just please use your stop work authority. Remember to take breaks. If you're overheated, don't be afraid to admit it and say, hey, we need a break. And just watch out for change of conditions and pay attention to what's going on. And if something changes, just stop. Stop and talk about it, fix it before going forward, and just make sure everybody's on the same page all the time. That's all I got.
And here's Michael Gentry, who we interviewed earlier,
Thanks,
some final messages for the team.
And then Mike Gentry.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Brian.
Available? Okay.
I'll start with my Cascade card. Had a team that showed up on site, performed their stretch and flex, which was obviously impressive. Worked the first 4 hours of the day, took their lunch break as a group, came back about an hour later, started up again. A junior level employee, so a new employee, mentioned to everybody, hey, we should probably stretch and flex again. We've been sitting in this crew cab for an hour. And I just thought that was a fantastic catch from a newer employee. They have new ways of looking at things, again, because they are new and still learning. And I just thought that was a great card to share. I heard mention earlier in the call about shop and PPE and the tendency to relax a little bit once you come from the field. Two of our most serious incidents this year actually occurred in the shop. Two of our recordables last year were from the shop. So obviously not a location that's void of hazards. So, you know, recognize what you're doing. If there's an instance when you're working around a struck by at the head level, it's okay to put on a hard hat. We don't require hard hats for our mechanics, but we do require an individual to look at what they're about to do and evaluate what PPE they need. So that never goes away. So just evaluate what you're doing. If you see a risk there, control that risk just like you would in the field. So I wanted to discuss a little something real quick. I've been in the health and safety industry for 34 years. Those of you that don't know me, I'm the Senior Director of Safety at Cascade here. And in 34 years, I've not seen a CEO as engaged as our Tim Smith in our safety program and our safety performance specifically. I often say, you know, nobody here is anonymous. Not one worker that works at Cascade is anonymous. Every worker here contributes to the betterment of our company. Unfortunately, for those individuals that choose not to comply with our policies and procedures and end up getting hurt, contribute to loss of business. So going back to what I mentioned, you know, this thing about Tim Smith and I's relationship, once a week we have a call where we review our performance. And that includes locations that are performing extremely well and locations that are struggling. So that's how engaged our CEO is. That's how important safety is to Cascade. That's it for me, Brian. Thank you, everyone.
That was great. Thanks, Mike.
Brian wraps up the meeting by offering one more opportunity for attendees to share an experience or a reminder.
Is there anybody that I missed? Anybody else want to add anything? Going once, going twice. All right, guys, that's all I got.
What's your Cascade card?
This is Rob Dankert, and on behalf of Sue Bruning, we both thank you for listening.
Don't forget to check out our website at www.cascade-env.com and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thank you for listening to Dig Deep, brought to you by Cascade Environmental. For more information about Cascade, go to cascade-env.com.